A play fake. Young goes deep middle. He's got Jerry Rice. Touchdown 49ers!
Welcome to another edition of the 49ers Family Podcast, where three generations of 49ers fans break down the game each week and hear from Grandpa Mike as he shares personal experiences and stories since he became a fan in 1949. My name is Josh, and I'm here with my dad, Jared, and my grandpa, Mike, and we are a 49ers family. Oh, yeah. All right. Let's recap the Rams. Let's preview the Giants. The Niners are 2-0. I think one of the things already, you know, let's be honest, this game was not as easy as maybe us three predicted. Looking back at our final scores, we'll talk about that in a second. We predicted, you know, a comfortable win. And I know it already from you guys, but I will say that was not a comfortable win. The Rams gave us some challenges, and, you know, props to the 49ers. They responded, they adapted. And at the end of the day, we won by 7 points. Should have been 10. Sean McVay just wanted to spoil some 49er fans' wallets at the very end there with that last second field goal that was worth nothing. But really an interesting game, but we find ourselves 2-0 at the beginning of the season before our first episode, or I guess in our first episode before our first game, I said that the Niners can't afford to get off to a slow start. And I will say, I don't consider this game really a slow start. I think this game was, we didn't really know what the Rams had to offer. They had some pieces and threw some stuff at us that, frankly, I don't think we were prepared for in that first half, where they had scoring drives every time they touched the ball. But anyways, instant reactions. Grandpa, what did you think of the game? What were some of your thoughts and takeaways?
Well, I agree with you, Josh. It was, you know, I thought this would be not an easy game, but certainly we'd handle business, which we didn't do. I grade it like as a C-plus game. But there's really no teams that turn out A-plus performances every week like we did in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. So there was a letdown. I thought our defense was flat-footed and very giving in the first half. Our soft zone defense was torched by Matthew Stafford in the first half. Mm-hmm. And I think the 49ers expected to have a pass rush against the Rams, and we did not. I mean, I couldn't believe it. You know, in the second half, we started blitzing and we forced two interceptions. So, you know, and Jake Moody, who we never talk about, he's 6-for-6 on his kicks. I know we were nervous coming into the season because he had a really rough preseason, but he's really done well, including a 57-yarder.
Right.
You know, on the positive side, we're 10-0 when Purdy starts and plays the majority of a game. And we're now 2-0 in the road and 1-0 in the division. We've won 9 straight against the Rams. So wasn't pretty, but it's a win.
Yeah, Dad, what do you think? What were some of your takeaways?
My takeaways were the Rams gave us a lot more trouble than I expected or wanted to witness. They were a very quick team, very fast team. Stafford got the ball out real quick, and they just were kind of eating us up. That Nacua was just hot, and they were just able to distribute the ball very quick. So our pass rush was relatively ineffective. That was their style. We were backed way off of them. It was making me very nervous because they were moving the ball at will. As the stats show, they had a lot of first downs and were very prolific with their passing game, you know. So we looked like kind of beatable, but we did have the better team and ultimately came out on top. And Brock Purdy was a little rusty. He wasn't totally on his game, but as you know, a lot of the experts have said that might have been he was a little off that game. But if that's him being off, and the 49ers still did what they did, then we're going to have a very good season. So anyhow, I was very happy to get out of there with the win. We made some adjustments the second half. So anyhow, it made me way more nervous. I thought it was going to be a very relaxing game.
Yeah, they did not make it easy on us fans. My heart was beating, as I'm sure you it was for you guys too. Let's talk about the score, because as you said, and Grandpa said, you know, he'd give it about a C plus, and I agree with a lot of what you both said, but we still scored 30 points. That is crazy. Mm-hmm. On an off day from Brock Purdy, we only threw for 206 yards. We end up with 30 points, and Brock Purdy didn't throw a single touchdown. Mm-hmm. So you know, it's pretty interesting. And when we look at the final score, what the kind of spread was last week, the Niners were, when we recorded the episode, they were favored by 8. By the time the game rolled around, they were favored by 7. The over under was set at 44.5. Dad, you had said the Niners would win 31-14. Grandpa set Niners 35-17, and I said 28-13. So not that I was any, like super close, but I was kind of the closest. So I'll put that in my my win column. But against the spread, we all lost because of that late field goal by Sean McVay, throwing that out there. And then the over-under, you guys bet the over, or wagered the under. And so I dropped to 0-2 against on the over-under. So all things pretty even. We'll keep tracking that. But so far, Dad, you have one closest game. I have one closest game. And then it's a bunch of 1-1s besides my 0-2 again for the over and under. So just kind of interesting, because that with the Sean McVay field goal at the very end, you know, it could have been 30-20. It did feel like it was a two-score game with 2 minutes left. And they drove the field in enough to get a field goal. But you know, that game was pretty much over with that, with 2 minutes left.
Mm-hmm.
Grandpa, yeah. What are some stats that popped out to you? I mentioned the 206 passing yards, and Dad, or you mentioned the two interceptions that we caught. What other things stand out?
Well, as far as the Rams are concerned, Matthew Stafford, you know, he's a very accurate passer. He has been his whole career, if he has time. And he, you know, was 34 for 55 for 307 yards, but he threw two picks. And that was the difference. The Rams held the ball. They had the time of possession 33 minutes to 26. Christian McCaffrey just keeps doing what he does, and he has another 116 yards rushing. He leads the league by, I think it's 88 yards. Is the next closest guy. So the only thing with Christian is he played all 63 snaps, and I thought they were going to kind of rest him here and there, but that's what a close game does. And then Puka Nacola, 15 catches, holy Toledo. You think Cooper Kupp is not going to play, and Cooper Kupp showed up in number 17.
Seriously.
The Rams have a lot of speed. This Rams team has 20 rookies, and you don't know what to expect. They went up and beat Seattle. And they looked very quick, and they have good speed. But, you know, and again, it's 20 rookies, and you typically don't win with rookies. So,
right.
Anyway, win, and, you know, those are the things that jumped out at me from the box score.
Yeah, the one thing that I didn't really catch during the game, but did after, was just third down efficiency on our side. Yeah. We were 2 for 9 on third down. Oof, I don't like to see that. Right. And the Rams were actually 7 for 14, so about, you know, 50%, which is pretty average, decent. But I would like to see that flipped. That at least we are at least 50% converting on third down, not 2 for 9. Yikes, that's like 25 or less than 25%.
When you think about it, I mean, we were 2 for 9, which is terrible, but we scored 30 points.
Yeah.
So kind of doesn't add up, but that's the way it was.
The way it was. Yeah. I mean, at least we didn't turn over the ball. You know, that was key. You know, really, I echo what you guys both said, that Brock Purdy didn't have his greatest game, but if an off game is no interceptions, and still throwing for 260 yards and winning by 7 points, putting 30 points up on the board, I mean, that just goes to show you that we are not a one man offense. We're not a one man band, because. Yeah, he missed some throws. He was very honest about that after the game, that he's gotta make those, because we were 2 throws away from winning by 21 points. Though there are a couple of those were not, you know, surefire touchdowns, but just about.
Yeah.
Dad, what do you think are some of the things that the Niners can improve this coming in? I guess this is a short week, you know, game is tomorrow on Thursday night. What are some things the Niners can do even in this short week to improve in week 3?
Things that I'll keep an eye on is, I mean, I think we are a very well-rounded, and I was happy with our offensive line did fairly well. They handled Donald well. They, you know, there was a good, you know, strategy to move the ball away from him, to get rid of the ball quickly. They doubled him up. They did all kinds of things to take Donald out of it. We just got hurt really by this last game with Stafford and our secondary. We were just playing, a little looser. So I think we could do a better job just tightening up our secondary a little bit, you know, just in our defensive formation. I think just tighten up the lanes and put a little slow down the routes for the receivers, I guess, because Daniel Jones, he'll be throwing the ball. I think Saquon is out. All right. He won't be there. So I think they'll be more one dimensional and probably go to the air a lot. So secondary, and that'll allow our defensive line to get to the quarterback, Daniel Jones. So I think just our secondary tightening up a little bit, that would be my, where I would want to see a little improvement in cleaning up.
Yeah.
But all in all, you know, Lenore, Ward, Isaiah Oliver, I mean, and Hufanga, they still balled out and got 2 picks and were able to slow down Stafford, especially in the second half.
Totally, yeah. And, you know, calling out some players, you know, moving on to game balls.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I can actually... Yeah, I'll go first. Sure, I'll go first. I have two that come to mind, so maybe if you don't carry one, I'll bring up an honorable mention.
Okay.
But two guys that stood out, there were two guys that stood out to me, but I'll go with my guy that I'm most proud of. And
I'm going
to
write it down real quick. Okay. I know it's going to be, but go ahead.
I'm going to go with Isaiah Oliver.
You took my guy. That's exactly right. He showed up in the big moments.
He did. I'm proud of him, because there's been, you know, he was brought in from the Falcons to be that nickelback. And they were honest to Steve Wilkes and Kyle Shanahan were kind of honest and said, you know what, it's kind of an open competition. And coming out of training camp and entering the season, Sam Womack was in that position. They dropped Demo in there a little bit. But then Womack gets hurt, Isaiah Oliver, next man up. He came in and delivered. Not only was he key on that fourth down stop, which was huge, because that's essentially, they don't count it as a turnover, but it's a turnover on downs. But Isaiah Oliver, just, he showed up when the moments mattered, that one. And then obviously he got the interception. So sorry to steal your thunder, Dad.
No, that's all right. I thought I was kind of think like when I watched the game, and he made himself in the backfield, made some plays, I think they rushed him, a time or two. He got it, the pick. He was just around the ball, had a pass deflection. It just seemed like the big moments, he was there. It was really fun to watch. And I felt after the game, looking at everybody, I look at those big moments and the difference makers. It seemed like Isaiah Oliver was out there at those moments and making those differences. So that was my guy as well. So good job.
That's all good. All right, Grandpa, what game ball? Who would you give one to?
Well, my game ball is going to go to somebody you probably don't think of, and that's Jake Moody. He's our rookie kicker. He was 3 for 3 from field goals, and he had a 57-yarder in a tight game. He scored a total of 12 points. And on the season, Jake Moody, 6 for 6. I know we were all nervous after the preseason on how to do, but he was in college, he kicked a 69-yarder. So we have a kicker. So I give my game ball to Jake Moody this week.
I'm so glad you did that, because that was my second. That was the two guys that I wanted. It sounds like we're all on the same page. It was Isaiah Oliver and Jake Moody. I'm just so proud of both those guys. For Isaiah Oliver, for what we already said. But Jake Moody too. I mean, rough preseason, gets hurt at the very end of preseason, and he rehabs his quad so he can be ready for the first game, and delivers in the first game. And, what people kind of always have said about Pittsburgh is that he has windy conditions and different things. He was the first guy out of the locker room at Pittsburgh, just because he was all about visualization. He wanted to spend as much time as he could out on that field visualizing the ball going through the uprights. I just thought that was so cool. And then, yeah, when we got stopped on whatever yard line it was, forcing the 57-yard field goal, I was, really nervous. I was like, oh no, young kicker. I know he's got the leg, a young kicker, but I don't want it to kind of hurt his confidence if he doesn't make it. And the best kickers in the world, they miss 57 yarders. That it's okay. They miss them less often than others, of course. But and then he hit that thing, and I was just so proud of him. I was like, that's huge for his confidence. That's huge for the team's confidence. That's huge for the coaches. That was just really big, and really big in a tight game, because instead of that 10 point margin at the end of the game with the Rams, with the Rams having the ball, it would have been 7 points. So they could have gone down and scored to tie the game. So super, super happy and proud of Jake Moody.
And the other thing about Jake Moody is he's now handling our kickoffs. He didn't against Pittsburgh because he still was somewhat injured. But he's kicking off, and he didn't reach the end zone on every kick, but he did 3 out of 4. So we have a kicker.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's transition on over to and now Giants week. And it's so funny because I always say I'm a fan of the Niners and Giants because, we're Bay Area fans. And now it's funny saying Niners and Giants in the same sentence, in the same sport. The Niners are against the Giants. But what can you do? That's where the Giants came from New York anyways. But Niners Giants, I mentioned already, Thursday night football, quick turnaround. We're filming this, recording this Wednesday evening, and the game will be on and probably almost over in 24 hours, which is kind of a funny thing. But the Giants are 1-1 coming into this game, all-time record against the Giants. 21-21. It's dead even. So this game will tip the scales toward one team, hopefully, obviously, toward the Niners. The Niners are favored by 10 points. Over and under is set at 44.5 again, just like last week. Should be awesome weather, though. 75 degrees at kickoff in Santa Clara. And one of my favorite things about this game that I saw when they came in at the beginning of the season, they actually now share the uniform schedule, which I find fun. I've mentioned before, I love kind of the tracking the uniforms. And this game is one of two this year with the red throwback jerseys, which I think just looks so clean. That 1994 throwbacks, which is actually a throwback. We talked about this last year of even earlier. But the simple logo, the retro logo on the helmets, the shadow numbers. I love these uniforms. So, and I know the players do too. So hopefully they look good, feel good, play good. Throw some Deion Sanders at them. So
yeah, I love it.
So maybe Dad, you want to walk us through the injury report and kind of the implications of those?
Okay, let's take a look here. So for 49ers, we have Brandon Ayuk. He's dealing with a shoulder kind of neck injury. We saw him kind of moving his head around a little bit and rubbing his shoulder. He looked he's just a little banged up, wasn't 100% for much of the game, actually, against the Rams. He's questionable. And then we got our Avery Thomas with a knee. And he's questionable. So Ayuk, I know he'll be out there doing his thing. He just may not be 100%, but 80% of Brandon Ayuk is better than, 80% of the league. So good to have him out there. And he's a threat, so he'll attract a lot of attention. The Giants, Saquon Barkley, he's out with an ankle injury. So he's their most prolific running back, and he's an all-star, so he'll be out. That's going to hurt them. And then we have concussion, Ben Bredesen, and then Aziz Ojulari with a hamstring, and Andrew Thomas with a hamstring tackle. So they got some offensive line and outside linebacker, it looks like. So they have some injuries, but Saquon Barkley, I think, is going to hurt them the most. I mean, he's on fire, and he's a big part of their offense. So it's looking favorable, and we hope Ayuk is getting some good chiropractic care and getting better.
Yeah, they said it's a good sign today at practice. Both Brandon Ayuk and Avery Thomas were listed as limited participants. Okay. Coming good. On Monday, they gave the players the day off on Monday, and they kind of gave I don't know really why they have to do this, probably because they have to, but they still have to list, if they were to have practice, what they would be. And Brandon Ayuk was listed as a did not practice. So that means that he has progressed in these few days. And yeah, he stayed in the game, even though it was on earlier in the game when he injured his shoulder. So we'll see kind of what that means. A couple of reporters have said that it'll be a game time decision. So I imagine he'll warm up. He'll go through warm ups, see how he's feeling, meet with the trainers and staff, and then kind of make that call. But like I agree that the fact that he stayed in the game, and sure, there's maybe a little bit of adrenaline, but the fact that he stayed in the game last week means he'll probably play. I would say. I think. But any reactions to the injury report?
John said on one of the radio shows in San Francisco this morning that Ayuk is fluid, so he thought he'd probably play.
Okay. Dad, were you going to say something?
I was going to say, I think it may come out later that he has a neck injury. That's what I think. Neck injury will often cause shoulder. This is where his pain was, and it's a lower neck problem. But instead of throwing that out there, I think they're sticking with the shoulder. But regardless, I think he'll play and move around. He'll just be a little more limited, I think, as far as he'll play less downs. I think that's my thought.
Okay. And it is pointed out on a podcast that I was listening to, 49ers talk with Matt Maiocco, and he had Greg Papa on, the voice of the 49ers. And they were talking about how Ronnie Bell actually got in the game a fair amount at the end of the game. Actually played the same amount of snaps as Juwan Jennings, and that was somewhat surprising. And Greg Papa pointed out that Ronnie Bell is essentially the second string to Brandon Ayuk. So if Brandon Ayuk is out, that probably just means more of Ronnie Bell, or maybe, like you said, maybe there's a balance of a little bit less Ayuk, a little bit more Ronnie Bell. But the way that the Niners kind of do things, that they each have their own spot, you know, the X, Y, and stuff. But that Ronnie Bell backs up Brandon Ayuk, Ray McLeod backs up the Debo Samuel, and then I already forget who backs up Juwan Jennings. But I thought that was just kind of interesting, but also encouraging that Ronnie Bell is seeing time in the second game of his rookie year, being a, what was it, Grandpa, sixth round draft pick, seventh round draft pick? That's pretty good.
Yeah, he was seven.
Yeah.
He made a key block on Christian McCaffrey's touchdown. And Juwan Jennings, he made, a couple great blocks too. I mean, it's so fun to watch how the team, it just – everybody's fighting downfield and making critical blocks and extending plays. It's a lot of fun. But those two guys, you mentioned their names, and you know, they don't get a lot of accolades because they're putting points on the board or something, but they're doing those small little things in a big way, and it's allowing us to be very successful.
Definitely. So Grandpa, tell us about the Giants now, some personnel, players to watch. What should we expect from them, and where are they coming from? What's been shown in the first 2 weeks?
Okay. Well, the Giants are the first of nine playoff teams that we're going to play this year. they're off to a terrible start. They lost to Dallas 40-0 at home, and they were behind Arizona 20-0. And so, I mean, it was 60-0 is how they started their season, but they did come back and beat Arizona. They're giving up 34 points a game. That's last in the NFL. And we're giving up 15 points a game, which is fourth. So there's a real imbalance there. The Giants have no sacks and no takeaways in the first two games. Let's see, Daniel Jones is a double threat. Of course, he's from Duke. He's a decent passer. He's completing 63% of his passes. He has three interceptions and two touchdowns, and they're really going to miss Saquon Barkley because he leads the team not only in rushing but receiving. And so in rushing, the number two guy for the Giants is Daniel Jones, the quarterback, and then they have two other guys, Matt Breida, who used to play for us, and this other guy, Gary Brightwell, and they've only carried the ball, both of them, a total of four times. So that's unknown. They're all good backs, but they're not like Barkley. So Daniel Jones, we've got to watch the run. He can really run. He's a double threat guy. And let's see what else. I think, so the Giants are giving up 136 rushing yards a game, which is 26th in the league. Then we're going to run. And McCaffrey is going to do it again. McCaffrey is 88 yards ahead of the number two rusher. He's got a big lead. I was surprised he played every play, but that just shows you how close the game was. So I think the Giants will pass against us. They're going to try and emulate what the Rams did. So it's one of those, until you stop it, people are going to go after it. So there's going to be, you know, a lot of quick outs. And, yeah, so, it, you know, no game is easy. I like being a 10-point favorite, but we start the game 0-0. So that's where I am. And it'll be good to be home after two road victories. And hopefully tomorrow night we're 3-0.
Yep. No, I think those are really good points. And kind of, you know, moving on to key to the game, because what I want to say is, you know, is kind of in reaction to the point that you just shared that he likes to keep the ball. I think my key to the game, and I'll get one from each of you as well, is we need to keep Daniel Jones from running. He's not as accurate as Matthew Stafford. Matthew Stafford, those routes were open and he has pure confidence in his arm, and he was throwing those right to where they needed to go. Puka Nacua was catching them for just 7, 8, 9 yards at a time. None of them were super big gains, but they were just efficient, and the Niners were giving them that space and they were taking it. I think Daniel Jones likes to hold on to the ball a little bit more than Matthew Stafford. Maybe he's not as confident. We know he's not as accurate. But I think the my key to the game is that the Niners defense needs to not let Daniel Jones beat us with his feet. They need to contain him. And those contain opportunities, because our D-line is so strong, that should lead to sack opportunities. But before even we sack, we need to contain him. Don't let him get outside that pocket, because I mentioned this right before we started recording that I'm not gonna be honest. I'm not gonna lie. I still have PTSD from all those years playing Russell Wilson, and the Niners struggle against a quarterback that can run. It's just a matter of fact. They do better against quarterbacks that that can't or are less prone to running. So I think besides Lamar Jackson, who we'll see later in the season when we play the Ravens, I think Daniel Jones is probably the second best running quarterback that we will face all season.
Mm-hmm.
Dad, what about you? What's your key to the game?
Well, besides containing Daniel Jones, he is their offense, and he is a double threat. I totally agree there. I think honestly it's for us to just keep winning the turnover battle. I don't know what are we plus four, and the Giants are -4 in the turnover battle this far in the season. And if we can win the turnover battle and protect the ball, hold on to the ball, we're gonna be very successful. And I think this game will be a great example of some key turnovers, and we'll have a decisive victory. So I think that's my key.
Yeah. Real quick before I get to you, Grandpa, I think that's a great point, Dad. And it was purely evident in that first game against the Cowboys that Cowboys defense, if you play fantasy football, scored over 50 points that game off of how many turnovers they were able to generate points. They had pick six or two, or maybe it was one of the scoop and score. I can't remember. But their defense put up an insane amount of points that really Dak, if you look at his stat sheet or whatever, his line on that Giants game was not impressive at all. Their defense won them that game. I think our offense is better than the Cowboys offense. And so if we're able to get some turnovers, I mean, we could also beat them 40-0 easily, if more. I'm not gonna predict that. But I think our offense will be able to take care of business. If our defense can as well enforce some turnovers, it could get ugly. Grandpa, what about you?
Well, I'm a proponent of, you know, you find a team's weakness or where they've been attacked, and we were just attacked by Stafford on the short outs, just throwing to the sideline. And so I think that's what New York will do, is they're going to, you know, try and just quick outs. And so we have to cover that like we did in the second half. And but that's what worries me, is just those quick outs. And they, you know, they go for 5, 6, 7 yards, and then again 5, 6, 7 yards, and they march down the field. So Daniel Jones also can throw deep, but I think he's gonna, their part of their game plan is gonna be the quick outs.
Yeah, I don't think he's gonna have enough time to throw those deep balls unless they have some designed rollouts where he can buy a little bit more time. But good point. Definitely agree. That's something that it's something to watch, especially, you know, coming out of that Ram game. We were able to make some adjustments, definitely, but can we maintain that and not give those short passes? You know, it's very interesting how Steve Wilks came in, inherited this defense. Literally the Niners told him, we don't want you to change the defense. We want you to take it for what it is and make it better. And, you know, somebody, I think it was actually Richard Sherman, compared it to, you know, we've now had 3 defensive coordinators in the last, you know, whatever, 3, 4 years. And that, you know, yeah, these defensive coordinators, Robert Saleh, D'Amico Ryans, and now Steve Wilks come in and they have their job, their guys, and this defense is just delivering. It's a well-run defense. We have, you know, really good playmakers, you know, at all levels. And Richard Sherman said, but at the end of the day, you know, this thing is a Ferrari. It doesn't matter which, you know, driver you put in it. It's still a Ferrari. And so we're seeing kind of iterations of that Ferrari, different models, but definitely seeing so far, like you said, the fourth in the league in points allowed, which or points against. So encouraging thus far. Okay, let's get to score predictions. Maybe Dad, let's have you go first. What are you predicting the score to be? Reminder that the line right now is Niners by 10, and the over and under is 44.5 points.
Nice. Well, I think it'll be Niners 34, Giants 17. Yeah, I think we're going to be pretty prolific, and we're going to, you know, we should have held the Rams to 17 points or under as well, but we'll be, the Giants will get it done. 34-17.
Awesome. Grandpa.
My prediction, and I have a formula I go through. I'm not going to share it with you guys because you're right on. My prediction would be the Niners winning 32-15. That's what the numbers tell me.
Okay.
So 32-15.
The proprietary formula of Mike Casey. I take a little less, it's called theoretical or academic approach. I think about how against their defense, if the Cardinals were able to put up so many points, I think we will be able to put up points. Mm-hmm. I think we will put up 35 points. And just because, like I said, I have some PTSD from Russell Wilson, I'll put the Giants 20 points. I will not be surprised if they score less than 20 points. I will be surprised if they score more than 20 points. But I will take the over. I think the Niners are going to put up a good amount of points. It's at home on a short week. The Giants are coming all the way from New York on a short week. That's very disruptive. You know, I do take that into account. And it's the home opener. So I think in the throwback jerseys at home in front of the fans, the Niners are going to go off. I really look forward to it.
I'm excited. Yeah, it's going to be fun.
It is fun. It's fun that the game is literally in less than 24 hours, because sometimes it feels so far away, especially when we have our Monday night games, we record it on Wednesday evenings. It's like that game's in 5 days. This one is in less than one.
Yeah. All right. I think the Giants stayed in Arizona. They didn't go back to New York because it's a short week. So they stayed on the West Coast.
That would make a lot of sense. So good on them.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Grandpa. Well, we always end these podcasts with a story or a history lesson about either the franchises, and I always enjoy them. So what do you have for us tonight?
Well, since we're playing the New York Football Giants tomorrow night, I thought we'd look back at some of the iconic playoff games that the Niners and the Giants have played. And so we'll do that. And then along the way, I'm just going to put in a little background on some of the stuff that goes on. So there's an old axiom when it comes to boxing, and you hear someone say, styles make great fights, meaning opposing styles collide, provide great theater. And never before was this most evident when the 49ers played the Giants during the 80s. The identity of the Giants was bloodthirsty defense led by Lawrence Taylor and crew. And on our side, it was Joe Montana and his legendary, you know, status. And he was considered the greatest quarterback ever. And so over the years, we've had a number of playoff games, but even going a little before that, just a little background, Bill Walsh was hired in 1979, and he took over a team that went 2-14. And in his first year, he duplicated that. He went 2-14 in his first year. And then the Niners improved to 6-10 in 1980. And then finally in 1981, it was the beginning of our dynasty. We went 13-3. And that was the year, of course, we beat Dallas in the playoff game, the catch. Mm-hmm. And so at the same time, the Giants had hired Bill Parcells as their coach, and they drafted Lawrence Taylor. Well, the Niners drafted Ronnie Lott, and they were both in the first round of 1981. So the playoff game in 1981 was historic. The Niners, they changed what was the norm in the NFL. They passed first to set up the run. And and the Niners that year had the number two ranked defense. The Giants had the number three ranked defense. And so we met in the playoffs, and Montana went 20-31 and two touchdowns, 304 yards. And we beat the Giants 38-24 as both teams were kind of coming to life. And the next game in the NFC Championship game with Dallas, the catch, and on to Super Bowl 16. So after that Giant game, we played Dallas, and then we went on and played Cincinnati in Super Bowl 16. And Walsh, you know, that's when he really became the toast of the town, and he was christened the genius in 1981. And others resented that. Parcells just despised the fact that Bill Walsh was becoming known as the genius. So 3 years later, 1984, Parcells and Walsh again got together, and this rivalry was just getting intensified. The Niners in 1984 went 15-1, and they almost went undefeated, as we talked earlier. And New York was now becoming one of the powerhouses. They rebounded. Phil Simms was their quarterback, and he threw for over 4,000 yards that year. And so the Niners beat the Giants 21-10 in 1984. So we're now 2-0 against them in this period. So at this point, Bill Parcells hired this guy by the name of Bill Belichick as his defensive coordinator. And New York became phenomenal defensively. They always, Belichick's thing is to take the number one offensive player just totally out of the game, as he often did. So the Giants, actually, in that year, they won 17-3, and it was a wild card game. But then, I went, here's the climax here. In 1990, you know, the Niners claimed to have the best quarterback ever, and the same, they had the best coach and Jerry Rice and all of this. And they were, and during 1990, 89 and 90, we won 18 road games in a row. That's how good they were.
Wow.
And we had won 2 Super Bowls, and we were going for a three-peat. Both teams met during the season, and we were both 10-0 at the time. And it was in week 12, and they met on a Monday night in San Francisco. It was the second highest watched Monday night football game in history. And the Niners won 7-3. It was just a brutal slugfest, a bloodbath, a bad game. So then, let's see, that was during the season. And let's see. And then in the playoffs that year, that's the year that Leonard Marshall hit Joe Montana at the end of the first half and just knocked him, you know, broke some wrists, or he broke some ribs and a wrist, and Steve Young came in. Again, we're going for a repeat, and the Niners are ahead 13-12 with 5 minutes left, and we had the ball. All we had to do was run out the clock, and we would be going to our third straight Super Bowl. And we started to move the ball. Steve Young passed to Brent Jones for 25 yards, and then Roger Craig ran a couple of times for 6 yards and 5 yards. And then with 2 minutes left, Craig fumbled on the New York 40. And Lawrence Taylor recovered, and they just, you know, moved down the field a little bit to Matt Barr kicked a 42-yard field goal, and New York won right with 2 seconds to go, 15-13, and, you know, ended our three-peat. So it took 5 field goals. That's all they scored to beat us. And so anyway, that's some of the history of the Giants and the Niners, just, you know, specifically in the playoffs.
I like how you very conveniently left out 2012 with Kyle Williams dropping those punts, then the NFC
Championship,
and one of the most painful losses. Oh,
two fumbles.
That was.
There was another game. I mean, I just didn't want to go on and on and on here forever. So there was another game where the Giants went way ahead of the Niners. It was like 38-14. And we came back and won 39-38. And there was some controversy on the last play that Giants were going to try a field goal. And there was a bad snap. So the holder threw a pass down by the goal line, and you know, the Giants were claiming pass interference, but nothing was called. So we won 39-38 after trailing by 38-14.
Wow.
So there's other ones, but I just narrowed it down to a few.
I love it. No, that's a good one to end on. I love ending on a win. Well, that'll do it for another episode of 49ers Family. We thank you all for joining, and I hope we get another win tomorrow on Thursday Night Football. So let's go get them. Go Niners.
Go Niners.
Go Niners.